This is Harold Kalman interviewing Thornton Sharp in Duncan, British Columbia, 9th of May, 1972. Mr. Sharp, you were born in London and you trained with Thomas Colcutt, is that correct?
Yes.
Can you tell me something about Colcutt's practice and the kind of buildings he did and perhaps the kind of buildings you worked on with him?
Yes, I can. It was a time of change. You know, there'd been all this Gothic and Classic and this, that and the other. Colcutt was designing furniture. And then he went to Italy and he was struck with Italy. You know how Italy in those days, Ruskin, all those stones of Venice, Italy was the place. And he got that sort of light, delicate Italian style. And then he designed furniture for, oh, that's where I forget, you see, because a well-known furniture firm, you know, I'll be able to tell you afterwards. And then he went into architecture, and I don't know exactly, but the way he got a big competition for the
Imperial Institute.
I was thinking of Colonial. I knew it wasn't Imperial Institute, and that is a whole block, an enormous block, a big city block. A length spread out like this. Well, it's about the size, or a good deal bigger probably, than the buildings at Victoria, Parliament buildings. Then he did a lot of English housework and so on, and the Cotswold was then about the fore, and that English work, Voysey and Lutyens and so on. He did a lot of that sort of work. He did the Royal English Opera House, it was called, one time in London. He did work on the Savoy Hotel. I was working at that time, and he was very, very English. He was very again foreigners, and the people insisted on opening the contract to different firms, and an American firm got it. And he built a lot in terracotta work. The American firm, this is any interest?
Well, anyway, some, yeah, no, it is, yes, it is.
And he, they got the firm, but he got the contract. That was for the Savoy. And there was a time clause and a penalty clause, you see, for overtime. And they started in and they got the steel frame up, you see, and they started to hang the terracotta. They got a whole floor hung. They found they'd hung it on the wrong floor. So they had to take it down and put it on the right floor. And of course they lost out on the time contract. I think old Cochran was quite chuckled about it. Anyway, another time, then he built the, well, he erected the, I've got a drawing of it actually, the P&O. That's the old P&O. We did all the ships for them, decorations. It was very interesting because the ships, to start with, they had a deck on a lobe, and you had a, but the ships cost so much themselves that the amounts you spent on the decoration didn't. Mm-hmm. You could really go to. And then he did the Lloyd's Register of Shipping. And that was quite a nice job, and he had some beautiful work inside. Moira did ceiling decoration, paintings, and Jenkins did a frieze. There's a frieze about this.
About a foot and a half?
About a foot or so. And all the way around the committee room, I think. And it was made of bronze. And the sails of mother of pearl, sails of mother of pearl, and the figures, the hands and the faces, were ivory. It's a lovely thing. I've got a copy of some. So he was generally, and he was president at one time.
Do you remember what years you were in his office?
Well, I could figure it out. I went, well, it must have gone in 97, that's 1890, and left in 1902, I think.
And is there any particular aspect of his work that was especially important to you?
Well, the only aspect, this is a funny one. I knew his style thoroughly, you see. So when I went to, I got a job in South Africa. So when I went down there, there was a competition for a university in Johannesburg. So I thought, well, I've ghosted in the government. I'll work at night and go in for the competition. So I went in for the competition because he was going to assess it. I went in for the competition and I got quite a good plan, worked for somebody else. And then I put a design, more or less, in his style. Naturally, one liked the style, you know, that you've been working in. And of course, he wouldn't come near me till it was all over. But then we asked him to come to dinner. I'd got married. He simply asked him to come to lunch, and we gave him a nice lunch of buck and local wine, you know. He said, you know, George, that was a very good plan you gave, but I didn't like the elevator. Well, there you are. And he'd reverted towards the end to getting back to more classic. Anyway.
You were in South Africa practicing architecture?
No, I was, when the war ended, I tried to go to the war and they wouldn't let me, I was a bit chunk. So when the war ended, they started an architect, there was a public works in the Transvaal, you see. They're engaging architects to put up new buildings in all these towns, you know, schools and town halls and all that sort of thing. So they took a bunch of architects and draftsmen out there, and we were put on a four-year contract engagement, you see. But it was, to us, it was very good pay. Of course, things were very expensive there, but if you were a single man, it was very good pay. What I mean is, I figured that if I wanted to go there anyway, but if I saved half of it, I'd be well off when I came back. However, I went there, and this is rather personal. I think you needn't bother to say this, but I was going to say non compos mentis, but I don't mean that. I mean the opposite thing, that I wasn't well received, because I was first class draftsman, they call it. And they got them all made up, and there was one man, and I applied, and they gave me the job. Well, when I got there, I found that the boss, a man, had wanted somebody else. And so he looked rather askance at me. And he really wasn't very enthusiastic. Well, I got this pretty soon, and actually, I think it was a good thing, because I was not advanced enough in my profession. And so I had a damn good time. And I got married, and I realized that I didn't know it all. And then they retrenched. Things got bad, and they retrenched. I don't. This is really not. So I got engaged, you see. I think I just got married. Yes, I just got married. So I talked it over with my wife and my father-in-law, and there was depression. And I said, here's a chance for some capital. I think I'll do it. So I did. I got fever, you know, the ordinary fever you get, in bed for a fortnight. I just built a new house and got married. And I expected to live the rest of my life in South Africa. And in a week, fortnight's time, I was away on the way. Yeah.
So you went from there to Canada?
I went on the East Coast, yeah. Back to England, through Venice, through Italy and stuff. Actually, I had quite a long time in Germany and quite a long time in Italy as a student and in France. Then, when I got to England, of course, I expected the government to give me another job. They offered me a job in Ceylon, a good job. Well, I understood that Ceylon was a very unhealthy climate and that you spent every cent you made anyway. And my wife wasn't very strong, so I cancelled that. And then we both wanted to go farming, or at least we're fond of animals. So Canada was the sort of place we looked at. And we were looking in at the CPR offices, you know, in Cockspur Street in London. And somebody came up to us, a man, and asked us who we were, what we were doing, where we think of going to Canada. We said, well, we had thought of rather. He said, what, are you an architect? Oh, well, you should go, there are great opportunities. I'll give you introductions. So he gave me an introduction to Saxon Archibald in Montreal. Do you know Montreal?
We're from Montreal.
Well, you know that. I don't know whether they're still there, but they're on Beaver Hall Hill. They build the Vancouver Atoll here, and a lot of work back east.
Were they contractors?
Archibald, no, architects.
Architects, yeah.
And so I came over to Canada.
And when did you arrive? Do you remember? Was it
in about 1906?
No. Did you have any impression of Canadian architecture being very different from English architecture? When you came to Canada, did you feel you were experiencing very different kinds of buildings?
No. Incidentally, the man who gave us the introduction, name was then. What was his name? I forgot. He was Lord of Beaverbrook later on.
Oh.
We didn't know it, but he was, you know, a correspondent. No, I don't think so. There again, I'm stuck. I can't remember that style. You know, the sort of Norman, Romanesque style. What do they call it? A man's name.
Richardsonian Romanesque. Yeah.
There was quite a lot of that which we hadn't been used to. But when I got here, well, then I worked with Saxon Archibald, and then I came through gradually to Calgary. I got work with an architect there. I think she said he was an architect. He was a plasterer. He didn't do any drawing. We did the drawing. I tell you a long story there, quite funny, but I won't tell you any. But anyway, then I went down to, the Depression came, and you can turn it off for a second, I'll tell you why.
So from Calgary you went to Spokane, then to Seattle, and now you're in Victoria.
Victoria, yes. And I arrived in Victoria on a pouring wet day, and I went around to see the architects, you see. And the first architect said, back in half an hour, and the next in back in 2 hours, and next back in something else. It was pouring with rain. And they didn't say with the time that they they wrote the message, so back in 2 hours, might mean 2 hours, it might mean 2 minutes. Anyway, Victoria was, might be any old country town in England at that time. I thought, well, this isn't much my business. So I cancelled my room at the hotel and got on the boat, the midnight boat, you see, and came up. Arrived in the Narrows there, a glorious January day with bright sun, lovely, you know, coming into the Narrows, into Vancouver. Well, then I went round to see the architects of Vancouver, and I showed them my drawings and so on. When I showed them my drawings, they all said, oh, it's too many architects here, we're very busy, and this, that, the other. So I put two and two together and considered, well, they're a bit scared. And I couldn't go any farther, only other place I could go, you see. So I decided I'd start there. So I put a card in Seymour, Marshall and Seymour. They were a finesse house there, in their window. And I got a job, and then I got another job. And then I got a competition for a school at New Westminster. I put drawings in, and my next door neighbor came one day. He said, oh, I want to congratulate you. And I said, what on? He said, I see you've got a competition, won a competition. Oh, I said, I hadn't heard of it, and that was very nice. So I waited a week, and nothing happened. And my neighbor said, what about it? I said, nothing's happened. He said, you better go over. So I went over, and they said, oh, we were waiting for you. I wasn't used to this. I thought that at least they'd send me a notice. So anyway, I got on with that.
This would have been, what, 1908?
1908 it would be. Yeah. Yes, I got arrived in 7 and 8 yeah. in Vancouver. I know I don't know a lot of things. Then I was joined by my partner shortly after. And I was very glad because...
Mr. Thompson?
Yes. He was assistant architect at the CPR. And I thought, well, he knows... You see, I knew my architecture in a sense, but I didn't know materials and I didn't know lots of sort of little ideas that they had here. And these cupboards, and then I must make my cupboards, and they must be the width of a coat hanger and so on, and this, that, and the other. Well, you know, they said this to me and I figured it out, but I was absolutely at sea in a lot of this, so I was very glad for somebody who knew it. And my two grouse guru.
Not at all.
And so then...
So you formed the partnership shortly after you arrived here. You formed the partnership shortly after you arrived in Vancouver.
Yes. Yeah. I'm very glad of a partner because I'm weak on mathematics anyway.
Well, I mean, now, how did your partnership work? I mean, were you... Did you tend to do more design and he more business? Or did you share the design? I mean, as a partnership.
We went in an equal partnership.
But I mean, from the point of view of who actually did the designs, did you have some projects and he other projects, or did you do most of the design work or he?
It was that, mostly. Unfortunately, you can shut off for me.
Well, let me ask you the same question I asked you about Montreal. Was architectural design in Vancouver very different from what you had seen in the East? Or did one build the same kinds of buildings?
Well, of course, it was more temporary. There was much more woodwork then.
But now, if you got a good commission, which was paying well, would you do the same design you might have done in the East? Or did you change your style?
What?
Did you change your style at all to accommodate the West?
I never changed my style to accommodate anybody but myself. Mm. Well, I mean, if I like a style and it's the right style here, that's what I do. When Calcutt came out, he said the great thing that really struck him, which was a first-class design for just what it was for, was the Prairie Barns. And they are, you know, they stand up and great big barns, enormous barns. Mm-hmm. They are definitely a style of their own. They don't come from anywhere else.
Now, you did a number of houses in the first year. I mean, what could you describe, either the kind of house you did, or maybe what house you consider to be your best house? I mean, what pleased you the most?
Well, I was always, in some ways a little ahead of the game. I did corner windows before anybody else was doing them. But I only did them where they should be done, not everywhere, where they became a cliche and everybody had corner windows. And so on, that sort of thing. And then my partner had a fit because I put a bottom window like that, all glass, you see, and then I put columns going down on the top. In the old days, you might have to get your column run right down to the bottom. It didn't be right. Well, that's simply because you didn't have the material, as I had to impress when I was building St. John's at the end. They all wanted Gothic and stone. Well, I said, I can do you a very nice Gothic porch for the money you've got, and then you have to get some more money. But I said, you know, they wouldn't have, the temples wouldn't have built with all those columns. If they'd had concrete, they could have bridged it in one go. And concrete's the stuff you've got to have in concrete today, more.
Well, like, by 1908, was concrete common in Vancouver? Or was it was concrete easy to get and easy to use by 1908?
Oh yes, it gradually came in. It was coming in, like all over the world. We had access to all stuff done everywhere, and you tried to get your own what you thought was best or what you'd like to do.
What about design or structural design of concrete? Did the architect do it himself, or did one have an engineer?
We always had to have an engineer almost. Or any much structural design.
Do you remember who the leading engineers were in Vancouver? I mean, who were the better engineers in Vancouver during these years?
Well, I don't remember, but we always had Ari. Very nice chap.
What is the name?
Ari, U-R-R-Y. He died just a little time ago, quite a yachtsman. He came, I think, from Port William or the other one?
Port Arthur.
A nice job.
Now, again, about your houses, is there one house that you did in the early years, like before World War I, that you're especially fond of?
Almost the first house is, I can't quite remember where it's on, and it doesn't belong to the other anymore. But it's, well, the type that, you know, what's his name here was?
McClure?
McClure, yes. Mm-hmm. That was the type of English house. He was just doing what was being done in England.
With half timbering? With half timbering?
Half timbering, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That was the house that was being done. We were doing in England, he was doing here.
Mm-hmm. What about commercial buildings? I know that, well, there are two buildings I'm familiar with on Water Street. You did 1911 and 12. One for Mr. Debrisse, or D-E-S, is it Desbrisse or Debrisse?
Oh, Debrisse, yes. Incidentally, nice chap, I did a house for him up in, they were wholesale grocers, I think. And then he retired and built a house at Penticton. I built a church there and a house for him. And he was a real Frenchman, you know. He liked to go down there and look at his orchards. When we'd get up in the middle of dinner, he said, look at that orchard, George. And then his nephew was my sergeant overseas and got killed in the Somme.
Now, the building that you built for him on Water Street, were you...
I don't know, it's just a warehouse.
Yeah, I mean, but was it, I mean, would you consider it very ordinary or very advanced for its age? I mean, were other architects doing the same kind of warehouse?
Yes, I think it was just standard.
And it would...
Of course, when we came, it wasn't a close profession here.
No.
And when they made it, you know, granted, they had to take in contractors, so anybody who was building, you couldn't very well shut them out. But of course that would die out as the examination question came in.
Now, you did St. Mary's Carisdale, you did St. Mary's Church about that time. St. Mary's in Carisdale?
Yes. That was an early one. I built my house, and a house each side of mine, and then St. Mary's across the way. And you know what the old-fashioned English chap, I was very young. Well, I was 26, 27, I suppose. And they made me, there were very few people, and we were living in a tent and a classroom for the services. And then I was put on the committee, everybody was more or less on the committee, and I never said a word, and somebody said, "Oh, aren't you an architect?" And I said, "Yes, would you like to visit?" "Oh yes, of course I would." I never shoved myself ahead and said, "Here, I'm an architect, I'll do your house for you." However, it was very nice, it was a nice job too.
Well, what kind of church were you thinking of? I mean, did you have a specific kind of model in mind when you designed it? I mean, are you thinking of English churches, perhaps, or Canadian churches?
Well, you always think of an English church, of the Church of England, don't you? It seems normal. No, what I mean is, yes, it follows the lines of all the churches and cathedrals. There's a nave and an aisle. Well, height is an important thing in a church, really. You come in, you go in through a little door, and then you look up. You should look up, you see. In those days, you see wood. So I built the posts, good big heavy posts, with a little post this way. You see, here's a post that size.
A square
post. Then there's one there, and one here, and one there, one there. Carry the beams every way, which when built that way group up like a, you know, like those Gothic
piers.
You remember the Gothic pillars?
Mm-hmm.
They're all give you that feeling of height, and it's got height there still. It's one of the highest of the small churches. But I was always feeling my way, and I was very often a little too far ahead of what I should be doing. I couldn't, hadn't really mastered it, and somebody else comes in with it.
Now, could I ask you about UBC, about the competition for UBC and how your firm became involved in it?
Yes. I wouldn't use the word involved particularly, but you mean how we won it?
Yeah.
We were just sucked in, you know. No, they had a competition, you see, for all British you know what I mean?
British subjects? No. You mean for the university? Or
you know, I'm awful. Perfectly ordinary words at the time.
It was open to all Commonwealth, members of the Commonwealth, or Commonwealth citizens.
Yes. Yeah. And we hadn't thought about it much. We had a draftsman there, and he drew my attention to it, and he said, "Are you going in for this?" I hadn't thought of it, so I went up, and we talked it over, and we decided we'd go in for it, which we did. And the government, I don't know whether I ought to say this too much, but it doesn't matter now, the government had been in power a long time. And people would get a bit tired. They gave things to anybody they liked and so on. So they got an assessor from England to judge it, you see. Well, we had no produce at all. And he awarded it to us. And
now, was it judged mainly on the overall overall plan or on design for individual buildings?
The what requirements were there is a site. Mm-hmm. We want a plan of a layout, they called it, for a university. Mm-hmm. So that's what we based it on. Of course, we looked at university plans all over the world and so on. And we got a very nice site. Well, then the Westbrook, who was the president, made the president, he thought we were rather young. He was rather worried, and he would like to get further commentary on. So they got, now I'm stuck again, and they got, I've got his book there, who's the first town planner in England, Liverpool?
No.
Well, if you put town planner there, I can give you the names afterwards.
Oh, sure.
Philadelphia University.
Chief architect of Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, not the architect of university, but the professor of architecture. Mm-hmm. I've got his name somewhere. And then the professor of engineering at McGill to come out. And they came out and they went through it. And the report they gave, this was an excellent plan, couldn't be bettered. The only mistake was the center line. And that was a mistake of the surveyors who put it out. They would suggest it went there. Well, of course, we should have done the same when we got on the site. So then we were called upon to get out plans, which we did. And you know, it's quite an expensive amusement. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of money over that. Then we got some figures in for the first building, which was the science building. And just as we were opening them, down in the old province building there, a message came through from Victoria, hold your horses. I don't know whether that was the words, but that was the intent. And finally, they just let the frame of the building and no finish, because the war had broken out and our friend von Spee was running around in the Pacific here. So they put the $2.75 million, which is nothing today, but was quite a lot of money in those days, into a couple of destroyers from the States. And I had to go overseas to fight the battle to see that it kept in our Well, that's the truth. And what turned off again when it goes right straight ahead, 2 years, finished, and up. Anyway, it's a good... had a good life over it.
For the design of the buildings, I mean, they're in Gothic Revival. Was there any question as to what style the buildings should be in?
No, none at all. We put them in, really Tudor period, because most of the universities were doing that then. You see the same up at Edmonton and so on.
If you had tried something else, would you have gotten away? If you had tried something else, would you have gotten away with it? I mean, had you tried a different style, do you think, would it have been acceptable, do you think?
Oh, if it had been good, it would, I presume.
Well, did they lean on you at all and tell you what to do, or did they leave the design?
They had a good architect to assess it, and He would give it to what he thought was the best. It was a good design, there's no question.
No, but I mean, when it came down to the design of the actual buildings, after you had won the competition, did the powers that be dictate much about the actual design, or did they just give you the program and leave it to you?
It was left to us. Fortunately for us, when we came back, I had to... They were sort of chucking us aside. And I said, we've won this in competition, I'm done if I'm going to fight for 4 years and then lose it. So we took it up. And finally they gave us, we should have had the whole, but they gave us the permanent and they took the temporary, which actually was very good for us because the temporary is where you make the money, but the temporary is just, you know, wooden stuff.
Of course, they're still there.
And it gave the government a place where they could put all their old healers in. We weren't interfered with at all. We could get a good straight contract and nobody questioned our fees or anything at all. It was just, they took this, if it came through us, it was okay. And then they did all the Nike business. They needed to repeat that.
Okay, I'd like to talk a bit about some of your designs that you did after the war, particularly your involvement in St. James Church. Now, yeah, but to what extent, well, maybe you can just tell me about St. James.
I built the clergy house. And that's concrete. That was almost the first concrete, complete concrete.
Might it be the first concrete building? Might it be the first concrete building in Vancouver?
Well, I wouldn't like to say, but it's one of the very early ones. And I introduced a little brick and tile to give it life. Well, then Father Cooper was related to Scott.
To Scott.
Scott, yes. So he got them to get out of design for the other, you see. I had got out of design, but he wanted it. Of course, they are outstanding. And so they got out of design in collaboration with us. And I went over to see him. And fortunately, I arrived just at the right minute. These are really side things, but you can always delete them. He was showing me, I said something about cedar. He said, here, I've wanted cedar, and these are what the samples they gave me. And they'd sent him out cedar samples, all stained and this and that. And I said, that's not cedar at all. We don't use that stuff. I told him what it was. So finally then he said, joy, that's just what I want. So I arrived just at the logical moment. Well, then he came out and looked around the site and so on. This was the brother, two of them, you know. He came out and he looked over things and we showed him the university and this, that and the other. And I was always very, very insistent that it was Sharp and Thompson did everything. Never me or anybody else. So I showed him a lot of the things, and at the end he said, you know, Mr. Sharp, the trouble of you is you're too self-retiring. I like the things you did better. Well, that was a matter. Because the things Mr. Thompson done were very, very good. I didn't quite prove some of them, but they were. Then they set their plans out and they were solid concrete. Well, now, the walls were this thick, you know.
About 2-3 feet?
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah. I said, you can't do that here. We can't do that. We couldn't afford to do that. So we had to have it. I had already completely go over it, make it in reinforced concrete and a double wall, you see, all this. 6-inch wall and a 6-inch wall. And that's how it went up. It was quite charming.
Whose idea was the concrete? Was it Scott's idea or your idea?
I think it was his idea, yes. Well, he couldn't have put it up in stone on. He couldn't afford it.
Well, no, I mean, we found the correspondence.
The masons.
Yeah, we found, I've been reading the correspondence between Scott and Cooper. Hmm? And I've been reading some correspondence between Scott and Father Cooper. And Scott says that he wanted to cover the concrete with some siding material. He suggests brick, he suggests shingles. And Cooper seems to tell him that he'd rather leave it in bare concrete. And I wonder, could you have been the little influence behind Cooper in this?
Well, I think what is it covered with?
It's just left at bare concrete.
Yes.
It was painted last year, but until then it was bare concrete.
Yes, well, it was washed the first time, I think. Mm-hmm. But yes, I would have it in concrete, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you can always wash it with the wash, but you don't want to plaster it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the actual design is...
You see, the whole bridge, the Burrard Bridge is all concrete.
Mm-hmm. Right. But at St. James, the design and the scheme is mainly Scott's.
Yes, yeah. The design of the church itself.
Mm-hmm. Now, St. John's Shaughnessy, which you began about the same time?
I'd retired then.
Well, now, there was some work at St. John's in 1931. This was, I mean, in the job book at Thompson, Berwick, and Pratt. I didn't look. 1931. Would that have been earlier work for the previous church?
Oh, I'd be there then. No. St. John's. Oh, well, no, I did some work then.
Oh,
that was the old church, wooden church.
Mm-hmm. But the actual church is after your retirement.
Yes, yeah. But I did it
from
here. Mm-hmm. They got me to do it, so I never had such a nice job to work because I did it myself here, just as I liked. I'd go fishing and then go out and carry on. And then I told them when I was ready. Mm-hmm. And then I went. Incidentally, I got the contractors crossing a Grand Street bridge, and he ran into the back of a BC electric truck and knocked me out.
Now, Burrard Bridge, you did that together with an engineer named Grant, correct?
Yes.
Where was he from Vancouver?
Yes, he's in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. He had some assistant with him, I think, in New York, assisting him as a draftsman. But I did the architectural end. And I did quite a lot because Grant was here, railway lines and so on, and he was putting his piers. I said, no, you can't. You have two piers like that, and then one like that, and then another like that. You've got to get a nice sweep. And I said, railway lines are nothing. They can push their lines around. In other words, you don't build a thing around a railway track. You make the track go its way. So I got the nice sweep, mm-hmm. and I got this long and gradual diminution of arches. Then I cut out all a lot of fancy balusters work and made it simple concrete design. And then I designed the thing at the end to mask the metal, you know, the span in the middle. And then I got some nice designed lamps, which have been taken down, but they were based on dolphins, you know, the group of, they call them dolphins, don't they?
Who made the lamps?
Hmm?
Who made the lamps?
Well, they were cast in the lamp post,
yeah.
Because I looked at all these all over Paris and London and so on, and in every case you saw that the bridge had been built and then metal, thin metal posts which just didn't look like anything.
And the dolphin design, it was your design, right?
Hmm?
You designed them and they were cast locally?
Oh yes, I designed the whole,
yeah.
Everything there, you see. But they'd got one of them down at the post, entrance post to the golf club,
end of first side, tape being turned over.